The World This Week. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Quietly, without undue ceremony or fanfare, two noteworthy observances took place this week. The 30th anniversary of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which ended the war with Japan, and the first anniversary of the resignation of Richard Nixon and the installation of President Gerald Ford. The continuing repercussions of both events were clearly in evidence this week. President Ford, back from Europe, hosted a two-day summit with the leader of the new Japan, Prime Minister Takeo Miki. An old Asia hand, Assistant Secretary of State for Far Eastern Affairs Philip Habib, said the meetings went well.
On the basis of firm ties of mutual understanding and trust, the President and the Prime Minister established close personal rapport. And in that sense, this was a summit meeting of great importance.
The timing of the Miki visit was not lost upon a handful of young terrorists who, without embarrassment, call themselves the Japanese Red Army. But they caused considerable embarrassment to Mr. Miki. Five of the militants seized the consular section of the American embassy in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, along with 53 hostages, demanded and won the release of five comrades from Japanese jails, and flew off with them, courtesy of Japan Airlines, to Libya. Their most illustrious hostage, American Consul Robert Stebbins, said they were men who knew what they wanted.
They were polite, but they were very precise, and they were very determined.
Trying to retain their perch on a dwindling political base, the pro-communist military triumvirate that runs Portugal named a new cabinet this week, mostly composed of technocrats and soldiers. President Da Costa Gomes was forced to concede the new government was only temporary. The junta was facing an uncertain future as anti-communist demonstrations spread. Four demonstrators died in clashes with leftist troops. Thousands of refugees from the fighting in the African colony of Angola marched in the streets of Lisbon demanding money and jobs. And most alarming, the rift widened between pro-communist and moderate elements within the armed forces itself. A breach that raises the specter of possible Portuguese civil war. Bert Quint examines the question.
An unusual kind of secret vote is going on in Portugal. It amounts to a counting of guns. Military men throughout the country are studying a document issued by nine of their most influential colleagues calling for a halt to Portugal's rush toward communism. The nine were members of the 30-man Revolutionary Council. They represent the moderate wing of the military that lost to the extremists in a recent showdown that confirmed Marxist-oriented Prime Minister Vasco Gonçalves in power, along with another radical, Security Chief Carvalho, an admirer of Fidel Castro. The nine officers were suspended from the council, and military chiefs have been told to prevent their men from signing the document. Nevertheless, it is believed many are signing. Among the original signers were two of the country's four regional military commanders. Other key officers reportedly share their feelings. Obviously, there is a serious split in the armed forces. If enough officers and men, with enough military strength, sign, the country's Marxist leaders may have to back down, compromise, or fight. Bert Quint, CBS News, Lisbon.
This week, Prime Minister Indira Gandhi virtually completed the job of converting India into a one-party state. With thousands of her opponents in jail, nearly total censorship in place, Parliament under her control, Gandhi sought and got insurance with a triple indemnity clause on retaining power. The legislators approved constitutional amendments, effectively exonerating her of the election violations for which she was convicted in June, then nullifying the laws themselves, and also allowing her to keep her state of emergency in place indefinitely. Most noteworthy, the Indian rank and file seemed to accept it all without protest. The World This Week continues after this message.
Have you entered the fabulous CBS Radio Mystery Theater contest? It's in full swing right now and will continue all through the month of August. Listen to the Mystery Theater today for details on how to enter. You can win an all-expense-paid, 7-day, 6-night vacation at Walt Disney World near Orlando, Florida. Each winner can take 3 people to Disney's Vacation Kingdom of the World. 16 people in all will be our guests. You'll fly first class and stay in luxurious accommodations. You'll see Disney's spectacular bicentennial celebration, America on Parade. You'll receive free tickets to all attractions at Walt Disney World. You can swim, golf, play tennis, ride horseback, camp, and dine in elegance. We have 400 Mickey Mouse watches for runners-up. There'll be weekly winners all this month. 16 people in all will have the chance to enjoy these free trips to the vacation kingdom of the world, Walt Disney World. Listen to CBS Radio Mystery Theater today on this station for all the contest details. Promotional consideration by Walt Disney World.
In one of the anniversary interviews he granted this week, President Ford warned of the lingering potential for war in the Middle East unless Israel and Egypt display diplomatic flexibility now. There came a flurry of optimistic utterances from Israel. In Jerusalem, Tom Fenton examines the prospects.
The pace of the negotiations, which had plodded along without noticeable progress since early summer, suddenly picked up. There was an exchange of proposals between Cairo and Jerusalem via Washington that seemed to bring both sides within range of an agreement. The first positive sign that a breakthrough might have been reached was news of resumption of the arms talks between Israel and Washington. Washington had shelved Israel's request for $2.5 billion in aid after the failure of Secretary Kissinger's mission last March. Israeli officials left today for Washington to resume the arms talks. The next sign was news that two senior Israeli officials have been called to Washington to help draft the legal details of a possible agreement. With Israel's latest proposals already on the way to Cairo, the Israeli cabinet met tonight in an atmosphere of optimism. Both sides seem to be close to resolving the main issue, control of the key Sinai passes that are now in Israel's hands. Egypt is reportedly ready to accept an Israeli presence on the eastern approaches to the passes, and Israel is reportedly ready to allow Egyptian troops to move up closer to the western end. Many details remain to be worked out, but the momentum is so great, the Israelis assume an agreement will be reached. Tom Fenton, CBS News, Jerusalem.
When Gerald Ford was elevated to the presidency a year ago this week, a concerned European newspaper wrote that the only thing we know about him is that he's an American. The tensions and turmoil of international affairs during the past 52 weeks have changed all that. Bernard Kalb examines the foreign policy of Gerald Ford.
Mr. Ford, with Henry Kissinger at his side, began his internationalization as president late last year when he flew off to Vladivostok for a sudden summit with Leonid Brezhnev. Since then, the president's calendar in foreign affairs notes the communist victories in South Vietnam and Cambodia, both inherited crises, the boost to his image provided by the controversial Mayaguez affair, his pressure to produce a new interim agreement between Israel and Egypt, his problems with Congress on military aid to Turkey, his mission to Helsinki to attend the much-criticized European summit with the Russians, his effort to write a new nuclear weapons agreement with the Kremlin at a time détente has come in for increasing skepticism, even though an ongoing dialogue with the Russians is an imperative in a nuclear world. The president's foreign policy accent still is one of continuity, marked by a certain willingness to run political risks. That is, take his position, notwithstanding what it may cost in votes. But the grand outline of policy, with its built-in capability for maneuvering on the terrain of rivalry between the Chinese and the Russians, still is Nixonian rather than Fordian. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, Washington.
Late this week, their convalescence complete, the three Apollo astronauts left Hawaii for Washington, D.C. to receive the personal plaudits of President Ford. But 3,000 miles away in self-imposed exile in his white stucco home in San Clemente, California, the man who considers himself the architect of the first international space mission is said by visitors to have been saddened by an aspect of the flight few may have noted. Richard Nixon's role in Apollo Soyuz had been all but forgotten. The World This Week has been produced by Harry Poloshin. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.